Hello and welcome to Heresy, the show that refuses to go along with modern orthodoxies. This is where you'll hear the unexpected, like Vin Diesel saying, well, I've read the script. Vin Diesel himself couldn't join us this evening. He's giving his Lear at the National. He's already signed up for King Lear 2. He's back and he's madder than ever. In his place here to challenge three pieces of modern received wisdom, I'm very pleased to welcome Mark Steele, Richard Herring and Janet Street Porter. Let's start with politics. We have a new government, a serious and experienced new cabinet. Here at Heresy, we managed to get hold of some audio footage of David Cameron and George Osborne as they moved their possessions into Downing Street.
This is living! This is style! This is elegance by the mile! Oh, the posh, posh, travelling life for me! First cabin and captain's table, regal company. Whenever I'm bored, I travel abroad, but ever so properly. Hold out, starboard out, and posh with a capital P. O-S-H, posh.
73% of our live audience in the studio tonight believe that Cameron and Osborne are too posh by half. But this is unfair. Between them, Cameron and Osborne represent a wide cross-section of the Bullingdon Club membership. It's ridiculous to say they don't know how the other half lives. They don't know how the other 99% lives. But who better than Mark Steele to see the positive in a posh right-wing government?
The problem, I think, is not people that are that posh. The problem is the moderately posh. They're the ones that are most infuriated. I mean, when you've got people like Cameron and Osborne, and they have been to St. Paul's and Eton, and they are so much in a stratosphere that even the Queen would look up to them and be intimidated about meeting them, then at least there's no sort of ambiguity about it. At least you know these people are properly, properly posh. Therefore, because there's, you know, it can't be coincidence that the cabinet's full of so many people all from the same school. I think that, therefore, the school I went to, Swanley Comprehensive, will have its turn next. And the new intake will be doing stuff like, we're just going to mush up the white paper, bloody get in it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and the rates for growth this year is, like, basic, innit? I think our turn will come, whereas the people who are sort of posh but pretend that they're sort of not posh, Blairy sort of people, those people are the ones who've been holding us back. So Cameron and Osborne and even posher people like that, then I'm all for them.
Janet Street Porter, do you think Cameron and Osborne are too posh to govern?
No, I'm thrilled they're governing because actually listening to Mark them made me want to weep. We come from basically the same background. I'm about as common as you are. I have no trouble with posh people. Look, I've got a double-barrel name. I've done better than you have. At least I managed to marry into the upper classes. Obviously, I came from Fulham where it was a working-class district. I managed to get into grammar school, and my goal in life was to bonk public school men and achieve a double-barrel name. Now, the fact of the matter is, there's nothing more nauseating than Labour people pretending they're working class. When look at what happened last year when we saw the MPs' expenses all published. Who had the biggest tellies? We can go on about the Tories and the duck ponds, but who had the 5-foot-wide tellies, the chair, the wall hangings, the champagne goblets? It was all the Labour ministers. They all wanted to be posh. They were thinking that if they got all this stuff, they'd be posh. So, at least with Cameron and Osborne, you've got people who went to the right school, they know all the right man, they're probably very nice. I can't wait to be invited around because they're going to be opening the doors, aren't they? And they're not going to have attack dogs.
Are you likely to be invited around?
Quite likely. I wouldn't have thought not.
Cameron and Osborne will be sat there going, I think we need a bit of rough. Or sort of.
Well,
Clegg demand.
I make one observation about Cameron and Osborne. Why they're going to be very good at running this country. At public school, how they run? Bullying, fagging, beating each other. Isn't this a better way to run the Houses of Parliament?
Richard Herring, what do you make of our posh new government?
Well, I do seriously think it's quite a bad thing to judge people for being posh. I think if you're going to judge Canberra and Osborne, judge them for what they do, not... because. I believe, you know, it's quite interesting to me, a lot of left-wing people who say you wouldn't judge someone for being born in a state or being born in a different country are prepared to judge someone just because they happen to have been born in a posh family. You don't choose to be posh. That's not your choice. You don't choose to go to public school. Your parents send you to public school. So I don't. If you're going to judge these people, you should judge them by what they do, not by where they come from, if that's what you believe.
The last time there was a coalition government, it was Winston Churchill and Clement Attlee. And Churchill went to Harrow and Attlee went to Haileybury. But I think people say they were perhaps the greatest prime minister of the 20th century.
It depends on whether they act in the interests of the people from the background from which they hail.
But, you know, but it's not about whether they're posh. You know, you can't say I hate them because they're posh. You can say I hate them because they're privileged and they enforce the privilege. But you can't just say it's because they're posh that they're bad.
A lot of Labour politicians say we're privately educated. The fact of the matter is the people in the Houses of Parliament are not particularly representative of the country at large anyway. And you haven't exactly got any bin emptiers or shop assistants.
Mark, you mentioned Nick Clegg earlier. And, of course, anyone who tries to slur Nick Clegg by calling him posh should have the courage to say it straight to his grandmother, Baroness Kira von Engelhardt.
I went to Oxford University. I probably was actually at university with David Cameron at the same time, I imagine. And, yeah, I mean, they are privileged people. I was in a weird position because I found it really difficult at university because you felt like, oh, my goodness, how did I get here? I shouldn't be here. And then I left university and everyone, and you go, if you said I went to Oxford, then everyone judges you the other way and everyone judges you. So I kind of guess the reason I've been a little bit more serious about this one than maybe I should have been is because I kind of know what it feels like to be judged as that person, even though I wasn't that person. And it's kind of not fair.
It's time to go to the audience, and unusually, because I'm not quite sure we've come up with a rousing endorsement of our posh new leaders, I'm going to look for audience members who disagree with the received opinion. So where's Angus Fordyce? the name is worrying me slightly.
Let's judge him before he speaks, that's what I say. He sounds posh.
Angus Fordyce, why do you disagree that Cameron and Osborne are too posh?
I think we've just had Gordon Brown in for a while. Hasn't really worked. He's a bit of a bitter Scots chap, so I think we need to go the other way.
Is he Angus? Is he?
I'm only a quarter Scottish. So I thought, you know, let's just... I think we should try the other way and get some posh chaps in and see what they can do. Hopefully more than good.
Is this the criteria on which people vote?
9% of the people who voted based on whether they like the leader's wives or not. Isn't that shocking?
Let's wind that up there with a plea to give the new bugs a chance. People are people, so let's not be snobs, traditional or inverse. Besides, Cameron Osborne is safely balanced by Nick Clegg, MP for Sheffield. He lives in Sheffield. He cares passionately about the people of Sheffield. And whatever the future holds for Sheffield, Nick Clegg will never forget where he came from. Chalfont St Giles in Buckinghamshire. Let's move on to sport. Britain is a great sporting nation, or rather several great sporting nations. There's nothing we like more than challenging ourselves physically, working up a sweat with tough physical exercise.
Galloping, that's all we. Me and him and them and me. We'll show you what we can do with a load of fools and a super kid.
Unfortunately, 52% of our live audience believe that if it doesn't involve running about, it's not a sport. That means great physical specimens like Jimmy White or Phil the Power Taylor have no right to call themselves sportsmen. Janet Street Porter, is that fair?
It's ridiculous. What about cake making? What about Scrabble? What about playing my favourite card game of all time? Sorry, I know you love poker. Bastard. Do you ever play Bastard?
I think so, but not with cards.
The thing is, like, my favourite sports in cake making, playing cards and Scrabble involve exactly the same thing as sport, you know, dreary sports like football and cricket and tennis. They involve a combination of intellect, reading instructions, hand-to-eye coordination. What's the difference? You know what? I hate all those sports that have got green backgrounds. Instead of having Eurosport or Sky Sport, I would love a TV channel just called The Green Channel. And all these things that have green backgrounds could be consigned there forever. So we'd have snooker,
cricket.
They could play football. It on red bays. And
Richard, do you think sport has to involve running about?
I think, well, cycling doesn't involve running about. Horse riding. See, with horse riding, is it the person on the horse doing the sport, or the horse is doing a lot of running around? Who's doing the work there? I'm not sure the person on top has anything to do with it, but... I don't know, swimming's a sport, that's not...
By the way, some people could say that about sex.
If you're running around during sex, I'm very impressed.
Sorry, that was a bit of a diversion.
I've clearly been misinformed.
Mark, you play football. Do you dismiss darts and snooker?
I'm rubbish at football, but I love watching it. And in fact, I can't possibly go along with this because I can watch just about any sport that calls itself a sport. During the last Olympics, there was one morning when I watched it for 6 hours solid, whatever came on. And in all honesty, the moment at which I thought, no, I'm going to have to turn this off and go out, was when the commentator's exact words were, and you have to say that is a defining moment in the history of Algerian judo. And I thought, no, I'd better go out. I've been watching about an hour of kayaking before that. I'm obsessed. I can watch it all and do watch it all. And I think the main thing... But now what frustrates me when it gets included in sport is things like ice skating. Not that I don't think ice skating is very, very skillful, but there's no actual competition. It's just a thing you do, and then there's people judging it, and that isn't a sport. You might as well have painting and decorating as an Olympic sport. And people go, oh, he's got all the corners, 5.8.
I
go,
but they need to introduce an attack mode in ice skating.
Exactly.
In figure skating, exactly. They fight against each other.
Exactly. And like with cake making, cake making could be a sport if two of you had to make a cake at the same time.
Yeah.
And it was teams of three, and one could nick round the back and go boom and squash the cake.
Then
it would become a sport, and then within 6 weeks, I'd be sat at 1 a.m. watching it on your own sport, going, oh, I reckon the Latvians are going to come back from this 4-3 first half deficit. They're apparently very, very good with sultanas.
There's a very thin line, though, looking at the Olympics. I mean, there's things in there that are so far away from being sports. I think if table tennis counts as an actual sport...
Yeah, definitely.
It's not a sport.
Table tennis, definitely.
It's ridiculous.
Definitely.
Synchronised swimming.
Swimming. No, because, again, it's just a thing, and then and then there's people judging it. And I was it with synchronised swimming. You're sort of half hoping that one of them drowns, because then, then the other one would have to drown as well.
Well, what's your idea for a better sport, then, Richard?
I'd like to see something I can do get into the Olympics. I'm good at Scrabble. I'd like to see that. Poker might be... poker... Because I've actually... The great thing about a game like poker is anyone can actually win it by accident. I knocked out the reigning World Series of Poker champion in a tournament, Joe Hatcham, very early on. I don't think I could beat any other world champion at any at anything else. So that's a good sport. Just give anyone a chance. Someone might just fluke their way to a gold medal.
Like a rock, paper, scissors tournament. I've beaten the king to finalist.
I think another one the British would be very good at would be happy hour beverage consumption. Easily, no problem, you know.
So you'd like to have seen Scrabble played as a school sport?
Oh, no, but, you know, I was a nerdy kid. I was very, you know, so I could do well at things like cricket and hockey that none of the actual hard lads wanted to play. I'd like to see it more into, you know, there's no reason why a game shouldn't be intellectual. I think you'd see chess is kind of getting close to being a sport. It's a kind of game of intellectual game. So, you know, I think when you come down to it, if throwing a discus or a shot put is a sport, or, well, you know, why is a javelin a sport and darts isn't? It's the same basic principle.
What if you had a giant dart?
Run-up.
Well, let's go to the audience. Marianne Botel, you strongly agree if it doesn't involve running about, it's not a sport. So darts isn't a sport?
No.
Why not?
I think I always associate sport with working up a massive sweat and scoring as well.
Yeah. What are you up to after the show, Marianne?
What you have to bear in mind is that the kind of people who play darts, I mean, some of them, by any medical opinion, should be dead at 28 years old. And some of them, you know, they're in their mid-30s. So surely what it takes to work up a sweat varies according to what kind of body you've got.
Well, yes, but I think also it should be a fast-paced thing.
So not cricket. Cricket's not a sport.
No, I don't think cricket's a sport at all.
When you said about cricket, this is not something I'm proud of at all, but when I was about 15, I was obsessed with cricket more than any other sport. And I remember there was a lad in my class came in, and me and a mate was equally obsessed. We were both talking about cricket as usual at the start of the lesson. And this lad went, "Oh, for Christ's sake, Stuart, what's all you go on about? I bet your balls have got seams round them."
That is enough of that topic. Any kind of sport, be it football or tiddlywinks, is tiring even to think about. That's why, even though physically I could have competed at the very highest level, I decided not to pursue a career as a professional beach volleyball player. Do I miss it? Yes. But I have other interests now, like cigarettes and lasagna. Finally, there's just time to go to Victoria Coren for the weather. Hello. Traditionally in Britain, we love the weather forecast. And we all know what we tune into the weather forecast for. Tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies. Tell me lies, tell me lies. Oh, no, no. Nevertheless, the barbecue summer of 2009 was one lie too many. 57% of our live audience believe we might as well just stop listening to the weather forecast. They're sick of its nonsense. Richard Herring, why should we keep listening?
Well, I mean, I think it's a bit much when someone's making a prediction for the weather in 6 months' time that you expect them to get it exactly right. I mean, I think that barbecue summer, wasn't it something like, it was? They gave a percentage, it wasn't like 100% certain we're going to get a barbecue summer. So I think if you're expecting forecasters to just be able to tell the future, I mean, it's like you want like Nostradamus is going to have to become, you want to know absolutely everything. So I kind of think, especially given how bad weather forecasts used to be, and now it's, you know, they can do a very accurate five-day forecast, and it's just like, people are saying, "Oh, only 5 days? I want to know what the weather's going to be like in 2025 on July the 14th. Come on, what's it going to be?" So, you know, I just think we're too critical. Something gets good, and we all do it. It's a human thing. Something gets good, and then we want it to be better. We get something that's okay. We go, "Let's make it better." It's hard to know what the weather's going to be. Imagine if Michael Fish had lived in medieval times, he'd have been hailed as a god for knowing it's going to rain one out of three times. That would have been an incredible skill.
Mark Steele, do you think the weather forecast should be cancelled?
No, I don't. I don't take any notice of it. And yet, it's sort of quite comforting that it's just there at the end of the news, and I'll go and put the kettle on and meander about and, you know, tidy up a couple of things that I've dropped. And it's sort of, and there's people waving arms around and sort of getting a little bit flamboyant and over extravagant and talking about scattered showers. And it's quite comforting, really. But like the shipping forecast, I love it. You know, who's got a clue what's going on? But I think it's quite nice that there's something happening in Finisterre, South by Southwest 6 rising from 14 or whatever it is. And that I can't believe, incidentally, that this is what seamen are actually relying upon, that they're bobbling up and down in the middle of Biscay, thinking, "Oh, for God's sake, make sure radio 4's on, otherwise we'll miss the shipping forecast." Otherwise, you'd notice this, sailors would all be experts on wisteria and we all know about you and yours and things, wouldn't they? Which it's just there as background. Nobody expects it to be right, and maybe it is right. It's a joyful, beautifully pointless English thing.
I don't listen closely either. You know, I don't need a weather forecast to tell me if it's February, it's going to be cold and wet. If it's July, it's going to be cold and wet. But, Janet, it's a sort of cultural staple, isn't it? It's a thing that's there.
I'm addicted to it. I get completely... I know I've got weird taste in men. I mean, I've been married 4 times, so, you know, I'm always looking for romance in unexpected places. Someone said to me once, "What are you looking for in a man?" I said, "Well, it's a bit pick and mix, really. I try this and then I try that." And at the moment, I'm completely
How
utterly...
did we get there from the scattered showers to that?
If you're me, it's very erotic. And at the moment, I've got 2 sexual obsessions.
Daniel Corbett, the weatherman, is he?
Daniel! You said his name! Thank God I'm sitting down. Daniel Corbett, spits and spots. It's the way that he reads the weather forecast, because he's very, very camp and very clipped.
Well, that's always a
very almost a disciplinarian. And he's got his bulletin and he's going to talk about scattered shells, and then he says, and next, southern England. And it's the way that he does his paragraphs. Oh God, can he be on the stage in Noel Coward? Do I have to ring the National Theatre and get him in a bit of Alan Ayckbourn? He's brilliant. So I've got a whole fantasy going about Daniel and Spitz. And when he said Spitz and Spots, I wrote about it in one of my newspaper columns. And I said, oh, no, I've given his game away. He won't do Spitz and Spots anymore.
But does he still do it?
Now he knows it's getting you going.
Yeah, it is getting
me. Spits and Spots it's going to be, especially for someone who's been a little bit naughty.
There, my other... well, he's not my love object. I'm obsessed with him. Is Paul on Look North. Now, Paul is, I think, physically of diminished stature because his big tie is almost the size of his head. Anyway, Paul has a map of Yorkshire and Wet Wang, which is a place in I think he must come from Wet Wang because it's a bit of a running gag. Anyway, anyone who spends any time in Yorkshire knows that we have five weathers in one day in all of Yorkshire. So everything Paul says is drivel. It's going to... You'll get a bit of this and a bit of that. You get spits, you get spots. But Paul is... it's just cabaret. I'm addicted.
It's pornography. If I'd known people... if I'd known people were getting off on the weather like this, I would have called for it to be taken off the BBC. It should be now.
We should stress that weather people are trained meteorologists. They have years of scientific...
No, they're dominatrixes. They're little minxes. Coming on with their warm front coming in from Belgium. I shan't listen to you, you dirty little vixen.
But I rather like the idea that they do all this training and yet they get it wrong. It seems to me a symbol of everything that's unknowable, a sort of nightly reminder of the limitations of man.
Well, it's incredible how this invisible ash cloud, they managed to track that completely accurately over Britain and tell you where exactly that's going to be. There's just one
point. Do you think they turn up at the airport with one of their maps going, and we've got a, and we've got a deadly ash cloud coming across here, moving in from the east, moving down across Yorkshire, should be knocking a couple of planes out of the sky early on, but it should brighten up later on around Heathrow.
I want to go round to the weather forecast gardens and see if they're as rubbish as mine. Because if they've got all that superior knowledge, have their peas started growing? Is anything happening in their vegetable garden? Because mine is a disaster.
Well, I don't know much about growing peas, but you can't just put peas in and then take them out every time you don't like the weather.
Mark, I've been down. I've tried talking to them and being nice, the Prince Charles approach, and now I've gone on to JSP approach.
You can't
just
the
shout
weather
out
people
get on with
that.
It.
That's not the weather people's
Bro,
fault.
It's crap weather. Well, just get on with it.
It's going to be mild early on this morning. Maybe brightening up a little bit later. Good afternoon for screaming abuse at your vegetables.
I can't
say that. I don't like
complaining
really
because I'm so turned on by them. I don't forget to go out and water the plants, so they all die. I'm too busy making my own.
I heard a program on Radio 4 once. I was driving along, and the announcer said, "And now on Radio 4, the next in our series of unusual weather incidents. Today, the unexpected lightning at Dunstable."
It's a serious point, though, isn't it?
That's brilliantly English.
It is a serious point, though, that one of the biggest threats facing the world is climate change. And I think even if the weather forecasts are getting it wrong, at least it's reminding us every day of something that's part of our lives. I would have thought taking it off the television, off the radio, would separate us even more from the natural cycles that we really ought to be paying attention to.
If the whole world does become a desert, it'll make the weatherman's job much easier. So maybe it's them leaving all the lights on in order to create global warming. It's going to be really hot today. That's it.
You still do it beautifully English.
Anyway, I'd like to be a weather woman. What is the qualification? It seems to be a lot of lip gloss, doesn't it? I mean, they're so strange.
They have a process where they go through saying, are you only being a weather woman so you can get to Daniel Corbett? Because you're not coming in. You leave him alone.
So what would be really good is if they started their bulletin and it had running across the bottom of the screen how much of yesterday they got right. So you could form an opinion about the probability of how much today they're going to get
oh,
right.
Oh, yeah, the government will bring that in, league tables of weathermen.
Let's go to the audience. Where's Lindsay Abbott? You think there's no point in having a weather forecast anymore?
Well, I didn't fill that in. My husband filled it in for me. I actually really rely on the weather forecast. I'm a bit like Janet.
But your husband leaned over.
life is a desert, and Daniel says that word, spits and spots, and you're off.
I'd just like to analyse this a little bit. You like the weather forecast, but your husband ticked the box for you that said that you didn't.
Yes, he's, I'm very obedient wife, and he's just let him fill it in for me.
Is the weather a very difficult subject in your relationship?
Yes.
I mean, I've got to say, if this was Mr. and Mrs., you two would have done very bad. I'm going to test you on the others. Do you agree or disagree that if it doesn't involve running about, it's not a sport?
I don't agree with that.
I'm sorry, you strongly agree. What about the first topic? Cameron Osborne are too posh by half.
Oh, yeah, yes, definitely.
Oh, you got one right. Yeah. Well done. Well done, husband. But goodness me, no prizes for you. Hand him the microphone.
Hello.
What's your name?
My name's Rob.
Why did you fill in your wife's ballot paper?
Well, she was late, unfortunately, so I presumed that the questionnaire had to be filled in one way or another, so I thought it was my duty to do so.
Yes, but...
Duty? That's in the wedding vows, that is. It's, if you go to heresy, one of you is late, the other one will fill in the form.
Here's the mistake you made, though, Rob. You also ticked the box indicating that your wife would be happy to express this on the radio. That one should perhaps have been a no.
I didn't know that she was actually going to be picked to read it.
Well, you know what? What helped that was putting yes, I will. If you'd just put no, we could have ensured she wouldn't have been picked.
Your prediction skills are akin to those of Michael Fish. I think it's time to wind up the show with a bit of love for the weather forecast, that cultural staple which, correct or incorrect, at least keeps us in touch with the elements. With practice, maybe we could develop our own sense of what's going to happen anyway. Animals have it. Cows lie down before rain, dogs howl before a storm, and before a sunny bank holiday, pigs might fly. Thanks so much to my guests, Janet Street Porter, Richard Herring, and Mark Steele. Good night.
Heresy was written and presented by Victoria Corran, with additional material by Charlie Skelton. The show was created by David Baddiel and produced by Brian King, and Heresy is an Avalon production for BBC Radio 4.